2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Hello, I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, and this is the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. On this episode, we're joined by Ann Dent. She is a political consultant and Home Safe Coordinator for the Utah Domestic Violence Coalition. And Ann, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. So excited to be here.
There's a lot to get on today, so I'm going to get on to it because I really want to get to some other stuff that makes me... I almost want to grow hair so I can pull it out. it's driving me so nutty. But so we are in the political season. Literally, this is the last, the home stretch.
The last 60 days, man.
That's right. What is going to be a pretty monumental presidential election. And as usual, President Trump is in the news. And this time, he actually kind of got in some trouble with the thing he supports so much, supposedly, is the military. And so, but I'm going to let, Ann or Amy take this one, because...
Sure. I'll tell you. Like, so The Atlantic published a story using some anonymous sources, which always bothers people, but, you know, having used anonymous sources, I understand the need for them at times, but basically saying that when Donald Trump, when he visited France in 2018, he was supposed to go to an American cemetery near Paris, but he said that rain kept him from going, because the helicopter couldn't fly and that the Secret Service wouldn't drive him. According to this article in The Atlantic, which has now been confirmed by the Associated Press and the Washington Post reporters independently of The Atlantic, just so you know, they didn't just read this article and they put their stamp on it. They actually found their own sources and confirmed these details. So it's been confirmed by three different news outlets that he didn't want to go to the cemetery in the rain because he feared that his hair would become disheveled, and that he didn't understand why it was important to honor American war dead. People with firsthand knowledge of the discussion that day said, Trump said, "Why should I go to that cemetery? It's filled with losers." In a separate conversation, Trump referred to the more than 1,800 Marines who lost their lives at Bellawood as suckers for getting killed. It's caused tremendous backlash for him, as Jason mentioned, with military personnel and veterans. Mostly what I've seen is veterans being pretty angry, but also I would say that comes from hurt. There's nothing more sacred than somebody giving their life for this country and for our freedoms, for especially to those who serve in the military. I was raised by a Vietnam veteran, and to the people my dad lost, he can tell you their names, he can tell you the details of what happened, and he takes those losses very personally. And so to insult war dead is a pretty tremendous transgression. And I don't see, he's denied this. The president's come out and said that he never said this. He also said that he never called John McCain a loser. And he's actually been calling John McCain a loser since...
For years.
Yeah, as Ann pointed out, since, I think, 1995. he's been doing interviews saying, he doesn't think he's a hero just because he got captured. And I am, as I've said on the show, a massive John McCain fan. I grew up admiring him. And he's not a hero because he got captured. He's a hero because of how he handled 5 years in captivity and that he wouldn't leave his men.
Absolutely.
And that
the guy has the option to leave, and he says, nope, I'm not going unless everybody else is going, and they tortured him some more.
Yeah. And he had physical, impairments, I guess,
absolutely,
from it the rest of his life. So,
absolutely,
not to mention, you know, that it was likely the cause of the end of his first marriage, and, you know, he had a tremendous...
Well, actually, that was at the end of his first marriage.
Well,
Stupin, his next wife.
Yeah, let's be honest about that, Amy.
But I think you guys can say, but when you're dealing with trauma, you don't always deal with it very well, right?
Not with my cancer-ridden wife in the hospital. I'm not giving him that.
Okay.
But
I think he is a person
to be admired for other reasons.
John McCain is the picture of elder statesman, right? Like, we can agree to that. He is somebody that I don't understand how any president or anybody can really say things that this president has said about him. And I think, and I've just jumped in, Amy, but I think that what's really getting to me too is that these electeds and these names in our state, Utah, have not come out and been offended by all of this. Where is their outrage? Because of their following of this president, they are mum's the word. And it makes me then think of them even less, which is, it's kind of hard because we're at a low, bar there, but it's just, I can't fathom where we're at right now with this.
See, what I don't get is Donald Trump may be persona non grata in 2 months. Why you would hitch your wagon to this horse when it's not even, guaranteed that he's going to be the one that you'll be riding later on or following later on is just what's crazy to me. And by the way, if you are people of integrity, you have, just don't even get me started if any Democrat has said it, but if Barack Obama would say the things that Donald Trump has said, people would lose their collective minds. There would be like this giant mushroom cloud explosion from everybody with an R next to their name. And yet, Donald Trump, who lacks the integrity of a gnat, is allowed to denigrate the people who he says he loves so much and he respects so much. And yet, the people who have proven their dedication to their service to their country, he can somehow make these disparaging comments about them when having never served one day in uniform and never even given the opportunity, figured a way to get out of that.
He had actually 5 deferments.
So I find it reprehensible.
Well,
the
and
likes
also
of people like Chris Stewart and what's the guy's name, Mike Lee, and all these other people who are quivering behind him. It just drives me nuts.
We live in a state where there's still almost 50% approval rating for this president. So it is, as I go back, just I can't understand why are all these people still hitching their what is going on? And I'm perplexed.
Well, and for me, it feels, and some of the things we're going to talk about today are intensely personal because my dad served in Vietnam, and I was raised. You know, I feel like I also, my mom and my siblings and I also somehow in a tiny way served because the impact that had on my dad. It continues to this day. And today,
no, that's not a tiny way. I think that
right.
families
right.
serve with their family members. So don't like.
Well, but I mean, I don't want to like co-opt my dad's service. But I want to say that when someone serves, and especially when they are a combat veteran, I think that reverberates throughout their lifetime. Today is my dad's 73rd birthday, and happy birthday, Dad.
Happy birthday, Dad.
And I think that, as I contemplated my dad's life last night and I was reading these things, and earlier in the day I had another discussion about police issues, and my dad is a 21-year veteran of the Alaska State Troopers. I'm feeling very, emotional and sickened by it. And I really want to make sure people understand next week we have the 9/11 anniversary, that, waving a flag or saying that you support thing, or, you know, putting your hand over your heart. Those are not acts of patriotism, so to speak. You know, what's patriotic is doing the right thing when it's really hard. And it's standing up for this country and standing up for what we say we believe in, like free speech, like, you know, your right to privacy or your right to protest. Or those are the kinds of things that make you, in my opinion, patriotic. And my dad taught me in a tremendous respect for the flag. I mean, and I could tell you stories that you would laugh about. But my dad was also very much a fan of, and he's where I get this love of, like, free speech. And this is why we have the country that we have. And so I don't understand why there isn't more outcry. I think that even if you decide you're going to vote for Donald Trump, you can be appalled and sickened and outraged by what he's saying. And don't let him wrap himself in a flag and get away with it. And don't let him hide behind soldiers who've given everything, and their families who were never the same after they lose somebody. Don't let him do that.
I also wanted to...
We got to go because we're running long. But we'll come back and I'll let you finish there, Ann. But we got a lot to talk about beyond just the president, because we also have the Democrats to talk about as it comes up, because we have now a full ticket and we know exactly what the presidential race is going to look like. We'll continue our discussion with Ann Dent and myself and Amy. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
We are back. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, and this is the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. We're joined today by Ann Dent, who is a political consultant and home safe coordinator for the Utah Domestic Violence Coalition. And we were talking about the president and his kind of denigration of military service. And you had a comment regarding kind of what's been transpiring of late.
I think I just wanted to add, as a naturalized citizen and as somebody who was raised in a family that is absolutely so patriotic, we have so many military members in my family and always celebrated, you know, holidays and flags. And it has been an outrage to watch this president deal with members of the military who are not citizens yet. He's deported military members and said that, you know, they don't belong in this country after they have dedicated their lives to the military, to this country. And, you know, that gets no airtime. And it's another ad perplexed to my list of things that I just don't understand why there's not outrage about this. Mm-hmm. How you serve in this country, make it your country, you know, leave your family, make all the sacrifices, and then you're told, sorry, you're not going to be a citizen and you're not worthy of living in this country. That is just something I don't understand.
And I honestly think the outrage, I keep waiting for these people, the leaders of the military, especially those who've served in the Trump administration and who've criticized the president directly, where are they? You have the power to speak now. You have the I think the moral obligation to stand up for your troops. I mean, let's be real. 60 days ago, we heard about the fact that Russia may be putting a bounty on our military people, and we've never heard that, I mean, that's from our intelligence sources, and that's never been dispelled, and there's no outrage. The outrage I see is from veterans like Tammy Duckworth. I don't see the outrage from our Congress and from, you know, from Republicans who say they support our military. I have a nephew in the military right now. I want to know if that's true, and I want that to be stopped. I want Russia to pay for what they did.
You know, I don't know that we're going to get that. It's one of those things where we can wait for as long as we want. But again, this to me, and I remember I'm 55, about to be 55. I have watched a lot of presidential circumstances, and this is unique to me that I can recall, at least in my lifetime, that a person who is objectively just kind of the opposite of everything that, you know, people are supposed to, you know, aspire to and I don't know, and just kind of represent as the president, has been allowed to just say and do, you know, outrageous things. And so the idea that what we are outraged by it, it's just us. It's like, seriously, it's just us. Because all of those other people, they're keeping quiet. So
only that, Jason, let's just be real. I know lots of people who admire him and think he's a great president and a great leader, and they think he's the greatest president since Abraham Lincoln. And I'm not, not an exaggeration.
I understand that, but Abraham Lincoln's been over, you know, exaggerated too, because he didn't get rid of the slaves because he loved it. He just did it because it was expedient. But that's another story. We can have that discussion another day, too.
I don't know about anybody else, but I think this quote, in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking notes. And, yes. You know, I think others need to, too. And it's not just our electeds as well. It's people, you know, in organizations and people in our families and everybody around us.
Other people in their families because of this stuff.
Yeah. So let's move on to the yes. Democratic ticket, because we now, as you said, have a full ticket, and it's a historic ticket. Kamala Harris, first African-American woman to be a VP candidate on a major ticket, and also the first Indian-American.
I just want to mention that Amy thinks the black women are going to take over America.
And I want that.
Well, I wanted to tell the story of, so, you know, I think that we all heard the whispers of Biden is, you know, planning on picking a woman of color, and that was the route he was going. And I was actually in Harmon's when this announcement was made, and I had to put my groceries down, and just tears started running down my face, and I sat in my car. And I'm not even, you know, I think Kamala is amazing. I'm not 100%, you know, for everything she's done in the past, but I think that she has risen and done so many great things as well. But as a woman of color, as an Asian American woman, an Indian woman, I know for me and so many other women of color, seeing her face be, you know, there is just something I can't even describe. And growing up watching C-SPAN and not seeing anybody that looks like me, and finally having this, is something that I can't even describe, is something that will, you know, all these younger women of color are watching this saying, oh my gosh, if she can do this, I can do this as well. And representation is something that people really underestimate. They don't understand how much this affects people like me and people like us.
You know, and I would agree with you 100%, because his representation means that I can see myself in that situation. Because prior to Barack Obama, you know, they could always say you could grow up to be president. Well, everybody knew, as long as you're a white guy, you could be president. But now they see the ceiling broken a little. That's not to say that there's always going to be this change, but there is at least an opportunity in people's minds that they can push forward, and maybe there's an opportunity for them. Seeing Kamala Harris have this job, as you said, and there's plenty of stuff that we could talk about regarding her that, you know, you may not agree with, but she is capable, she's smart, and you just know that at the very least she's qualified to be able to do this job. And you know that there's others just like her who also are equally qualified, and they are women, some of women of color, and they deserve the opportunity to be seen, first of all, and then to be heard using their voice and their intellect to show all of us that we've been shortchanging them for forever as far as this country is concerned.
Yeah, for me, I feel like representation matters for a very long list of reasons, but the one thing for me as a voter or as a citizen of this country that I feel when I see, I felt this way when Hillary Clinton got the nomination. I felt this way when I was watching some great women run in the Democratic primary, and then seeing Kamala on the ticket now, is they understand my experience in a way that even the most sensitive and compassionate man cannot. And so, you know, they've been underestimated at work. They've been targeted. They've been told to dress more feminine or don't dress so feminine. They've been criticized for their makeup or their hair or what. So their experience in this country is, I know they feel it in a way in their bones, right? And that's what I feel when I see them campaigning, and I think, what would our country look like if the people making decisions were more representative of the people experiencing America at this moment? How would the policies shift? How would things change? What kind of conversations would we be having? And that's really my my joy. I feel like, Anne, I also shed tears and felt, I honestly felt some relief, because I just am so desperate for diversity in our political representation.
We got to get going here, but I want to say that I hate to think that I'm the only one that wasn't crying, because honestly, I thought it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to pick her. You know, that's just me. So when we come back, I want to switch to another serious topic, because I am tired of black and brown people being killed in the streets of our country. When we come back, we will continue our discussion with Ann Dent and myself and Amy. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Back. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, and this is the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. Today we're joined by Ann Dent, political consultant and home safe coordinator for the Utah Domestic Violence Coalition. And I want to get to a topic that, you know, has exasperated me for about 55 years almost. Yet another unarmed black person has been shown that this happened before George Floyd, actually. But they kept it kind of under wraps. A man, he was mentally ill. And I'm drawing a blank on his name. I have to come up with it in a second.
Richard Prynne?
Yes. And Rochester. He was, his family actually called because they knew he was having some issues. By the way, because always everything comes back that I'm from Chicago. This guy had actually was going back and forth between Rochester and Chicago. Just throwing that in there for no good reason.
Sorry, Daniel Prude.
Daniel Prude. So he had some mental illness. So he was walking around the streets of Rochester nude. Not obviously something's not right. However, when he was approached by the police, it's raining on this day, by the way. I'm going to throw that out there too. They apprehend him. They put him in handcuffs and sit him on the wet ground. And I'm going to be really angry in a second here. So I'm trying to keep it as best I can. And then he tells them he has COVID, so they put a hood over his face. And so they say that he won't spit on them. And then they press his face into the ground until he can't breathe, and he dies later. All right, so I'm through. I'm just so angry, and I'm beyond angry, because the anger only lasts for the second. I got to realize I don't have time to be angry, you know, and I don't have time to be sad. I don't shed no tears. I am just sick and tired of police acting like they are animals. They are just despicable human beings. That is not to say them all, but the ones I am watching do this, they don't. If police don't understand why folks hate them, then they are the stupidest people on earth, because that's why they hate them. When you kill a person who obviously was mentally ill, you put something over his face to asphyxiate him, and then to make it worse, you put your knee in his back and press his face into the wet ground with no consideration for his humanity. And then you just go about your life as if you did nothing wrong. And then all of the police you watch, they all either are silent or they co-sign on it, which is to say they act like, okay, that just, it happens. There's a reason why black and brown people have a different relationship with law enforcement, because the institution itself does not respect us. It shows us that every day. It shows us that we are not human beings to them, whether they are police officers or prosecutors, because they put us in jail longer as if somehow we can't be, somehow there's no situation where we can be better. But they will allow the Jeffrey Epsteins of the world to traffic young women to people of power and influence. And then nothing. Only thing happens to him is he gets killed in prison because they're worried about him narking on everybody else, because they know they're all in cahoots. This and this happens locally. When the young man here most recently killed in Salt Lake City, he was shot as he was falling down. He was not aiming his gun at anybody. First of all, he couldn't keep his pants up because he fell two or three times, and the police felt the need to shoot him and kill him dead. I do not have a sense of any kind of righteousness for those who are wearing badges today. And I'm also tired of hearing them acting like they're the ones under siege and you know, nobody loves them. Because you want to know what's harder to be a police officer in America? Try being a black or a brown dude in America. Because you don't have a gun and a badge to shoot back and protect yourself. If I do anything other than capitulate and just give my body up, that is a crime. I've committed a crime, even if I am being beat into the ground or about to lose my life, or the police officer is completely out of line. I have to be the guy that just takes it. That's rougher than being any cop. So enough with the police and, you know, this feeling sad for them. What they got to do is do the right thing and treat people like human beings, like they would want to be treated if they were in that situation. And until they do that, they're going to continue to get the protesting, the demonstration, and the just the feeling of lack of empathy for them, because they haven't shown that to people of color in the entire time that law enforcement has been in existence, as long as America has been a country. I am done.
That's hard to follow up on, first of all.
I just want to do this.
Yeah, this is, wow. And thank you. And I can't pretend, even as a woman of color, I can't pretend to understand, because as a black man, like persona non grata in this country, people who think that black people should still think that, teach your children that the police are good people, and if you call 911, they're going to help you. That is just a different world. Even as a woman of color, I know that if police are called on people of color, it's a totally different situation than when they're called by a white individual. And what is so frustrating, I think, for me in my realm, and Amy and I have these discussions, is that I'm not surprised anymore. And it's been before, you know, Donald Trump has been in office, is that these things have been going on systemically for so long that we hear about it. We don't even remember the names of each person that's being shot and killed or choked or every day by the police. And then we see on the news white men who have big guns that are, you know, walk by the police and taken to get hamburgers, and that
walk into state capitals armed.
that are described in the media as, you know, a black man who is having a mental breakdown. We're hearing about when they sold a joint 20 years ago, but a white man who kills 10 people, we hear about how hard their life has been and how they struggled with video games and depression and anxiety. And I am honestly, and you know, the media coverage of all of this and the bias and how we are turned into animals, not only by police, but, you know, society has deemed us, and especially black people in this country, unworthy of protection, unworthy of respect, unworthy of justice. Breonna Taylor, like, what has happened?
What did she do?
I don't even know how to, as a woman of color, to be outraged. Are you angry, Anne? What's happened to, for you today? Like, if I don't have this sunny disposition, then people are still surprised. And as a woman that feels like she has to walk this line because I want to build coalitions and make progress, I'm angry. But I'm scared to be angry. I'm scared to show that anger because then I'm labeled the angry brown woman and I don't get to be at the table. So there are so many layers of this conversation that are so hard and I don't know how to move forward.
We have to stop this and come back because I don't want to run out of time. But Amy, we'll let you say something too. And also we got to talk about Pat Bagley's cartoon. Because yet again, it goes back to politics. Because so much of what we do is politics, and you know how it kind of goes into everything. It seeps into everything. We're joined today by Ann Dent, a political consultant and home safe coordinator for the Utah Domestic Violence Coalition. And of course, she's Amy. I'm Jason. This is Voices of Reason. Hello and welcome back to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee along with Amy Donaldson, joined today by Ann Dent, political consultant and home safe coordinator for the Utah Domestic Violence Coalition and just friend of our show. And Amy, Ann and I kind of co-opted the last segment, so did want to give you a chance to kind of respond to the whole police brutality thing.
Yeah, I mean, and as you both know, I come at this, I have a sister who's currently in law enforcement, my dad is retired, both my brothers-in-law still serve as police officers. So I come from a long tradition of law enforcement, but I think even they would tell you there are a number of issues that they don't deal with very well. And I think what I've been disappointed with, and we're going to get into talking about the Pat Bagley cartoon, and I think these are related topics, is there are issues in the media. We have representation issues. There are things that we do, Ann and I, that's how we met, was her complaining about media coverage. but there are things we do in the media that are hurtful, that are impactful, that change the conversation, and that completely leave certain communities out of the conversation and out of solutions. And I think that I am the first person to say, let's have this conversation. You know, Jason, I'm constantly complaining to our bosses and constantly saying, what are we doing? How are we changing? How can we evolve? How can we fix these problems? I don't think the media has been very responsive about the issues, but I'm a media member saying that. And what I don't hear is law enforcement officers saying, yes, we have these issues. Yes, we have some people we have a difficult time policing our ranks, and these are the issues in the system that make it hard. I would say that you being responsible for turning in other officers who you then have to rely on in life and death situation is a fatal flaw in the plan. There are a lot of things you can see in the system that don't work. But the bottom line is there are issues in policing, and if you are denying that at this point, I don't know how, I can't even have a conversation with you. I think that what needs to happen is at the highest levels, you need to see people saying the kind of things that at times we've heard from like Mike Brown and other chiefs saying, yes, there are. I think the new chief at the U has been one of those people who said, yeah, there are issues and we're trying to solve the problems, and we want the community's help with that. And so hopefully some of that starts to move us forward. But I don't see that as a widespread response to, you know, the Rochester one. Daniel Prude's death was so, I mean, I know you guys said you're beyond that. It just is so debilitatingly painful for me to watch and know that this is happening so often that, and we don't know about it. What if there weren't these videos? What if we didn't know? Look at Elijah McClain, you know, the 23-year-old kid who was choked to death, you know, for no reason. He's not even a danger to anybody. And, you know, I just think that if we can't evolve somewhat in the conversation, I don't know how this ever changes. And it absolutely has to change. And I think the first place is to say that there is a problem and that it is a deadly problem for some of the, you know, for 50% of this country, so people of color. And so I think it leads me to the Pat Bagley cartoon where he did what political cartoonists attempt to do every day, and that is to provoke with a cartoon. And so he has a doctor standing next to a law enforcement officer who's in uniform, and they're looking at an X-ray, and the X-ray near the bottom, the lumbar of the back, this bottom of the back, and his hips are a Klansman's hood and shoulders. And then he says, well, I think we see what your problem is, or, you know, I'm going from memory on this, but the, you know, I think we see what the problem is. And his explanation for that, I got what it was this cop is sick, he doesn't feel like something's right, he goes in, he gets the X-ray, and he finds that there's this white supremacist, you know, issue, right? And he's saying, in order to heal yourself, you have to know what the problem is. You have to get a diagnosis, and then you can find the cure. And that's sort of the gist of the cartoon from my perspective. And I will be honest with you and tell you, it felt like a gut punch. Because I don't know a better human being than my dad, and you've met him, Jason.
I have.
That man he's run into a burning building to save people he didn't know. He's flown missions in the bush of Alaska to help people that most of this country doesn't even give a crap about. And so I feel bad. A bit of me feels personally insulted, but I also know it to be true. And so I want it to change, because I want my sister and my dad to be, you know, 100% appreciated for the heroes that they are, and not this sort of like caveat that's like, but yeah, but there's a lot of cops who have these issues. It's not anything I'm making up. The DOJ and the FBI have both said for over 10 years that in different reports, that white supremacists have infiltrated law enforcement organizations. That's a fact. What are we going to do about it?
Well, it's been happening since law enforcement was started, since it was a slave patrol to begin with. But then we all knew that white supremacists, back then it was a KKK only. But I mean, all of these people, it's the reason gangs started to go to college. They became organized crime so that they could be smart and infiltrate these various institutions to make it easier for them to conduct their illegal enterprises. If you are a person that happens to be a white supremacist and you know this, then you would want to have people within these institutions that could help you forward your agenda in a way that would be legally sanctioned. It makes perfectly logical sense. Now, what is difficult, though, is that so frequently the institutions themselves, the people who are leaders in their hierarchy, they refuse to acknowledge that. And so because they're too busy being defensive rather than recognizing, of course, it makes sense. We got to get rid of this problem. It's the same thing that happens in political parties, too, right? You know, the Republicans got to realize that there is this perception, whether they believe it or not, that it's a racist party. And Rick Wilson, who's written two books about this very issue, knows that this is what it looks like. We have to do a better job from within to make it look better for the outside and be better for the outside. And the same thing has to happen in law enforcement. And that includes prosecutors as well as people in uniform.
Just wanted to also add, in this state, Utah has one of, is up there on police shootings. And as I'm watching from my political, you know, goggles, I'm seeing these elected. So yesterday on Twitter, we had Senator Thatcher just outraged. He called the cartoon a disgrace. Black Lives Matter. Police reform matters. I am hard at work with law enforcement and the NAACP on continuing efforts. This kind of trash makes it harder. Congressman Stewart, like, same kind of message. And I just want to ask them, like, do you really think there is not an issue? There is an obvious issue here. And you pushing back against this gives this kind of movement more fodder. They have a voice, and it's so scary. And it goes back to what the last segment was about, is that police officers, a large amount of them, feel like they are empowered. And we're seeing this in Cottonwood Heights. We're seeing this in Utah. We're seeing this in our nation, is that police officers can shoot somebody in the back 7 times and, you know, a protest the next day with KKK flags and all kinds of things. And there's not a problem. There's not an issue. We also see affiliations with electeds and police chiefs.
Absolutely.
With these groups. And can you imagine if a black or person, can you imagine, and I hate to even name, so I'm not going to be specific, but if any police officers, especially, you know, sheriffs in this state who are of color, had Black Panthers, you know, paraphernalia, or were endorsed by them, it would be an outrage. So I the disconnect again, and just the naivete, but that I don't think people are naive. They know what's going on. They see it. They don't want to admit it. And this is why black and brown bodies are also being murdered every day, and there's no justice for them, is because of groups like this that are empowered.
And I'll also, let me just add really fast that also there's a First Amendment issue here. And if you say you're for free speech, then I'm sorry, don't be offended by a cartoon. Or be offended by a cartoon and walk on by. There's no reason to do anything other than say, well, that was offensive. I read stuff every day that offends me, and I just keep on trucking.
And sometimes it comes out of the face of the person standing at the presidential podium. Join us again for the next episode of the Lava Project's Voices of Reason. I'm going to get that last comment in with nobody saying anything after. If you have comments about our show, please contact us via email at bormed@gmail.com or at borjasonl@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Twitter at adonsports and at jasonlee1. Our show's Twitter handle is at @vorpodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our show and all the places where you find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We'd love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, along with Amy Donaldson, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.